finishing up what we brought up this morning, and I wanted to impress us this morning with what's going on that we can't see. We couldn't know about Satan and his role in our lives against us if it weren't for what the Bible showed us. But the fact that he is, and that he's there fighting against us, and he wants us to lose, is real. And it's something that should stir us to action. And as we were looking at what Peter's writing about in 1 Peter chapter 5, I wanted to get that picture across so we could see what he was talking about when he talked about being sober and vigilant. And we talked about how being sober doesn't mean you're so serious and disconnected that nothing really affects you because you know the big picture, but it does have to do with living your life with the big picture in mind. Being sober has the idea of the perspective in which you live life. We know we have a terrible enemy, and we know we have a great God, and we know, like we repeat over and over at Foundations, our ultimate goal is to live our life and go to heaven. And we want to live with that in mind. Living that way is living soberly, because it helps us look at the decisions in our lives and compare them to the perspective of living a life to go to heaven. But that doesn't mean we can't be touched by people here and now and things that might seem small. In regards to that, we observed how Jesus did that. And vigilance. Vigilance means not only having that perspective, but being careful to keep that every day, to continue day-to-day in our decisions, to look at our lives from a perspective that says, there is someone who wants me destroyed, who's trying to set traps for me. He wants me to fail. He's powerful and he's active. Knowing that daily, keeping that perspective we have, and causing it to alter our perception of life every single day. So as you put self-control or temperance, that is being prepared for this life, together with sobriety, having the right perspective of this life, and vigilance, perceiving our life the way we should day to day, we see how it comes around to show good qualities for a person of God to make decisions in their life that they need to make. Now, how do we stay awake when we're driving? And isn't that really, you fall asleep because you weren't vigilant in the first place in some sense. You weren't prepared already. And whenever we look at our walks in Christ, it turns out it can be similar. If we go off of track of where we should be, and we hear a lesson or we're studying and we come across it, what we find is at some point we fell asleep. We weren't vigilant. We weren't sober where we needed to be. We made a decision with the wrong focus in mind or not based on the truth. And so we suffered somewhere there. How do we make sure we maintain that? That's actually part of vigilance, isn't it? It has to do with some other attitudes we read about Peter writing on, because he was writing to distracted people. And what do I mean? Well, whatever we have to distract us today, you think, well, it's a lot different than them. Not really. We've got electric, and we have different technologies. But doing reading, you find that the Greek calendar was filled with holidays, and the things that they did during these holidays were intermingled with different kinds of pagan worship. And someone who is trying to be a follower of Christ then could get distracted. Another thing is that you might have lived a life as a slave. Evidently, two-thirds of people who lived in Corinth, for instance, were slaves. And so two-thirds of the population was considered to be owned by one-third of the population there. And if you think of a life of a disciple of Christ then, what your life consisted of is working from daylight till dark, and you don't get a day off. You don't get Sunday off. You can't get vacation or sick days. And so what did you do? Well, you tried to worship anytime you could. You tried to get to a place where they had the scriptures for someone to read anytime you could. You memorized as much as you could, and you met with other Christians in secret is what you did. And doing that and deciding you weren't going to worship false gods and deciding you weren't going to partake in these different feasts and things that maybe your master would have taken you to would have gotten you in trouble. And so you could have had a master who would have treated you severely for what you did. And what's that have to do with what Peter's writing? He deals with that in chapter 2. If you have a master that mistreats you, even though you haven't done anything wrong, if he's mistreating you and you're doing good things, you need to endure that. And he's writing there, and in chapter 3, we're very familiar with the verse that says, "Sanctify the Lord God in your heart, and always be ready to give an answer for the reason of hope that is in you with meekness and fear." Well, he's saying, who's going to mistreat you if you do good things? But if it happens, because there were people who were mistreated for doing good things, keep on doing it. In chapter 4, he's going to say, there are people who think it's strange that you don't do what they do. They're going to think it's strange, and you're going to be mistreated for it. And you're blessed if you're mistreated for doing the right thing. They could be easily distracted because there are all these fights going on, and we can do that today, can't we? We fight with battles with our time and with our finances all the time, with balancing work and children and school and family. How are we supposed to do it? What decisions are we supposed to make? And sometimes, like they were in danger of, we can get caught up in day-to-day, look at what my master did to me. Look at how these people mistreated me, and all I'm doing is trying to follow God faithfully. Or we might say, look at how things went at work, or look at how things went at school, or how do I decide what activities we participate in? And we're so busy. Everybody can be busy. Well, that fits right in here with what he's talking about, because he's saying all these things are going on, but don't lose focus on this, that there's an adversary there who wants to destroy you. And that brings everything back into balance. We say, okay, these things that I'm bothered with right now, where do they line up in this? And is Satan using some of those things to hurt me? And what can I do about it? And as we tie it in here, we see that right before, he's mentioned that we need to be humble. He's talking in chapter 5 about the shepherds of the flock, elders of the local congregation, how they should act. And then he turns to the congregation in verse 5, the congregation and younger people, but also anyone in submission to elders. And he says, "Likewise, you younger people, submit yourselves to your elders. Yes, all of you be submissive to one another and be clothed with humility." And that's one characteristic I wanted to look at. If we're going to be vigilant like we need to and have the right view of our life with God and heaven as the ultimate goal in mind, we've got to be humble. And the moment we lose that, look, at the same time we lose the thought that I have to be vigilant. Why? Because if I'm not humble enough to say I could make a mistake or I have made a mistake, I'm not perfect, I have to grow a lot and I have to keep growing. If I'm not humble enough to say that, then I'm not going to be vigilant. And I'm not going to go out tomorrow deciding I'm going to make the right decisions because I've already think I've got it in the bag. I can do this. I can save myself. So this is the first part of the three things I want us to remember to help us remember some characteristics about this. And you've heard of the box turtle on a post, right? If you see a box turtle on the post, you know that he had help getting there. And I want to finish that. Yeah, right? Okay, you know he had help getting there. And I like to finish that and say, and he's not getting off a good way without help. Okay? It's only bad unless he has help. That helps me. It's a good way to look at myself, because I am where I am because I've had help getting here, and I'm also not making it out of here okay without help. And if anything impresses us, looking at Satan being like a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour, I think of Ephesians chapter 6, verse 12, where he talks about how we fight the invisible powers of darkness, the powers of this world. That's what we fight. And ourselves, we're completely torn to bits. There's not a thing that we can do. So he's talking about having the whole armor of God. But it helps me remember something I need to do to stay on point, to stay focused with the right perspective, as I have to say, I've had help getting here. I need help getting out. And I need to stay humble in order to do that. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, Paul's made an illustration, And if we're not careful, and I've done this before too, I can say, well, I'm not going to make that mistake. And in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, he talks about how the children of Israel, left Egypt, and they forgot God and worshiped the golden calf and were caught up in idolatry, and God destroyed them. And whenever you go to verse 11, he says, now all these things happened to them as an example, and they were written for our admonition upon whom the ends of the ages have come. Have you ever read that and gone, wow, I can't believe they did that? I just can't believe after the 10 plagues and going through the Red Sea, how did they ever just give up on God and go do that? That's us if we're not vigilant and sober. That's what he's saying. That's what anybody ever does when they start relying on their own care, on their own help, on how they get themselves through life and forgetting God, not humbling themselves to see how much they rely on Him. Remember, they were concerned when Moses was delayed in coming down from Mount Sinai, and so Aaron got together their gold earrings and he made the golden calf and said, here's the God who delivered you from Egypt. So before we say, oh wow, I can't believe they did that, do we ever act in our life like how well I do depends on me and me delivering myself and how my job goes and how this goes and how that goes? Or do we say, no, I have to humble myself and know I'm where I am. By the grace of God, I am what I am, Paul said in 1 Corinthians 15. And I'm not getting out of here without God's help. It takes humility to do that. And that's why it takes humility in order to stay vigilant and sober. He ties that in 1 Corinthians 10. He says, therefore, let him who thinks he stand take heed lest he fall. There's where the humility comes in. You think you've got it. Well, it's okay to be happy with how you're doing and want to continue to do better. It's not okay to decide that you've got it made. And Paul, the Apostle Paul, Spirit-led Paul, performing miracles, wrote most of the books in the New Testament, planted most of the churches that we read of in the New Testament. Paul, he said, not that I have already attained, but I look ahead. Paul hadn't even reached where he said, I've got it made. Paul had to stay vigilant and he had to stay sober. And here he's writing in 1 Corinthians 10:9, therefore let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. And this is why, what's going to go on? There are going to be trials in your life. He says, no temptation has overtaken you except such as common to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but will also, with the temptation, make a way of escape that you may be able to bear it. Now, what do we have to do in order not to get caught off guard by that? I can't be so prideful as to act like I'm not going to have to make a change. I'm not going to have to get better at something or grow stronger. And when I think I'm doing okay today, I can't just give up and relax. That's the opposite of vigilance. Vigilance is everything's okay today. Let's keep it up and make sure everything's okay or better tomorrow. We have to be humble enough to know that we need help. And I bring it up this way. I know we're all very quick to say, I'm not perfect. I make mistakes. We might even say, I sin. It's hard to say that, isn't it, sometimes? But I sin. We're quick to say that and that we're not perfect. But the true test of if we really believe it, if we're really humble enough to do something about it, is what if somebody comes to you and in kindness would point out your sin? Now, I'm not saying that'd be easy, but how would you take that? Are you humble enough to say, okay, I already acknowledge that I'm imperfect, I sin. Are you humble enough to say, is that legitimate? What can I do to do better? Sometimes when it comes to our lives and making those changes, we're not quite as quick to acknowledge that we make mistakes as we are when we're just saying it in general. So something to think about. We need to remain humble in order to have the vigilance and sobriety that we need. So remember that box turtle on the post. Another thing I want to remember is the frog. And this is just an acronym that can help you. And you all have heard of this. What did it mean? No. Fully rely on God. Frog. Fully rely on God. So we're humble enough to know that I didn't make it here on my own, and I need help getting out. And so as a result, we fully rely on God. Not a little bit, not say, I need God's help. We sing the song, I Need Thee Every Hour. Now, why do I only think of that song during hard times? I don't know. That's something I need to work on, because that's not what that song means. It doesn't mean I need you when things seem bad. It means I need thee every hour. Fully rely on God. And as you look at what Peter says in 1 Peter 5, he says, likewise, younger people, submit yourselves to the elders. Yes, all of you be submissive to one another and be clothed with humility. For God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. And that gets to, we need God. If I think I can do it myself, I've missed the humility. I need the humility to recognize my need for God. Therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time, casting your cares upon him, for he cares for you. And that's what humility has to do with that part of casting cares on God. Because if we're not humble like we should, we're going to look for everything else that I can do to help myself. And then when things get real bad, then we're singing, I need thee every hour. If I'm real honest, I do that too much. And if I look at my life and I've got to fix something, it's easy to say, well, what can I do about it? Who can I call about it? What can they do? Oh boy, things are real bad. There's nothing I can do about it. Hopefully God can do something about it. That's backwards, right? Fully relying on God says, I'm humble enough to know I need God every hour. So I cast my cares on him, even the little stuff. Any of us who have been parents, we know that it's okay if our kids come to us with something that they don't understand, even if they think it's little, it might be really little to us, but come to us. Our Father wants us to come to him. Why? He cares for us. Casting your cares on him, for he cares for you. We recognize we need him all the time. And remember in Zechariah 3 this morning that we looked at, the high priest Joshua is in filthy rags before God at this judgment, being accused by Satan. In Isaiah 64, he brings up rags again. And you're familiar with this verse, and that our righteousness is as filthy rags. But look at what else is going around in Isaiah 64 as he's talking about it. And it has to do with everything we've been talking about. He's talked about how the people have left God, and he's including himself in it, and he's calling on, saying, oh, that God would give some great signs that people would recognize who he is. In verse 3, he picks up in that idea, saying, when you did awesome things for which we did not look, you came down, the mountain shook at your presence. For since the beginning of the world, men have not heard nor perceived by ear, nor has the eye seen any God besides you, who acts for the one who waits for him. You meet him who rejoices and does righteousness, who remembers you and your ways. You are indeed angry, for we have sinned. In these ways we continue, and we need to be saved. And it's interesting that Isaiah is saying we here. He could point his finger at everybody else and say, look at how awful my nation is. But he's including himself because he realized where he was in all of this. And considering that they had all sinned, that we have all sinned, we need saved, he says, but we are like an unclean thing, and all our righteousness are like filthy rags. That's why we need the good clothes that God provides, his righteousness. We all fade as a leaf, and our iniquities, like the wind, have taken us away, and there is no one who calls on your name, who stirs himself up to take hold for you. For you have hidden your face from us, and have consumed us because of our iniquities. But now, O Lord, you are our Father. We are the clay, and you are the potter, and we are the work of your hands. Can you separate humility from relying on God like you should? And the answer is you can't. How do we rely on God? Like we're clay and he's the potter. Well, how's the clay rely on the potter? Completely. It knows that it can't shape itself. It's not going to be able to put itself in the shape that it needs to be. And it's going to be put through some difficult shapes and things that might not make sense to it. And then you know what a potter does to clay after it shapes it like it wants it? It puts it in a hot oven. And that probably doesn't seem very nice to the clay either. But that all goes along with this idea. We can't rely on our own righteousness. Our righteousness, our power is like filthy rags. There's not a thing that we can do about it. What can we do? We fully rely on God, and that brings us to our next animal. We looked at the box turtle and the frog. Have you ever heard of an alligator turtle? Those are pretty interesting. Last zoo we went to, there was an alligator turtle, and they have really impressive-looking shells and a sharp-looking beak, and if they're on their hind legs, they're about this tall. They're pretty big turtles. And they stick their tongue out, and it looks like a worm. And they don't move. They don't move at all until a fish comes by and they snap it up. And they hold so still that there have been two zoos that I've been in looking at an alligator turtle, and there have been people saying, oh, that's not a turtle, that's just a statue they have in there with the rest of the animals. And I say, no, that's an alligator turtle, it's fishing. Well, what do we learn from an alligator turtle? What's it have to do with this? In Isaiah 64, he brings up the same thing that Peter is going to be talking about a lot in 1 Peter. He says that there's no one who's ever heard of a God except him who acts for the one who waits for him. God acts for the one who waits for him. And that's a good line to think of when you think of, well, what is patience? Patience is waiting for God. Patience isn't being very good at sitting in a waiting room for your appointment, not tapping your foot. That's not patience. That's this little bit of patience. What patience is waiting for God through hard things. It's being vigilant, looking at life the way you need to, over and over, even when things aren't going well. If the alligator turtle closes its mouth and moves somewhere else when a fish didn't swim by its mouth, it'd never catch anything. But it has to sit there when it's not getting anything. Do you get that? Even when it's bored. I imagine it has to be quite boring to be an alligator turtle. But it has to wait there. When you look at 1 Peter chapter 5, after he said, be sober and vigilant because your adversary the devil walks about like a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour. How long do we need to do that? Resist him steadfast in the faith, knowing that the same sufferings are experienced by your brotherhood in the world. Be steadfast in the faith. Keep going and don't stop just because things get hard. That's really what patience is. It's suffering under pressure for a long time. How long? As long as it takes. And that's largely what the book of 1 Peter is about. It's actually about patience, living in patience. He doesn't use the word necessarily that often. But you look in chapter 1, and isn't that what he's saying in verse 6? He says, in this, and that is that you have a place reserved for you in heaven. He says, you greatly rejoice, though now for a little while, if need be, you have been grieved by various trials, that the genuineness of your faith, being much more precious than gold that perishes, though it is tested with fire, may be found to praise, honor, and glory at the revelation of Jesus Christ. In James chapter 1, he says that we should count it all joy when we fall into various trials. Why is that? Knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. It helps you get through other trials and prove, in a sense, what you're made of, in the sense that you rely on God fully. And it helps you learn better to rely on God. And here it's talking about being tested, being patient. And as you keep looking in chapter 2, in verse 18, he says, servants, be submissive to your masters with all fear, not only to the good and gentle, but also the harsh. Think of that for a moment. Be good to harsh masters. For this is commendable, if because of conscience toward God, one endures grief, suffering wrongfully. For what credit is it if when you are beaten for your faults, you take it patiently? There's that word patience. But he's saying, but, he says, when you do good and suffer, if you take it patiently, this is commendable before God. And being patient doesn't mean that you just wait a long time. It means you will be under pressure, under suffering for a long time, and you endure it. And look at our example. He says, for to this you were called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us as an example that you should follow in his steps. So a much better example than an alligator turtle, perhaps, because I hope we don't fish like an alligator turtle fishes, would be here the example of Jesus. And this actually breaks down to mean like a school teacher would write your letters so you could see them on top of a board and you could trace under them. That's what Jesus did for an example of suffering and patience. He did the right thing even when he wasn't getting anything out of it. Even when it all looked bad, he kept doing it. And he didn't falter. He didn't leave and he didn't give up. That's living with vigilance. And that's living with the end in mind that you're striving for. That's patience. And none of us is ever going to write as well as our teacher. But we try over and over and over, and our emulation of Jesus gets better and better. And having that patience, that another way to translate is long-suffering. And what's long-suffering mean? Suffering for a long time, but suffering for a long time and remaining faithful. That requires us to know who we have to depend on. We have to completely depend on God. And we know that because we're humble enough to know that I need to do better. I am not perfect. I sin, and I need to strive to follow Him according to His Word. All those things. And when we're doing that daily, we're practicing the preparation that we need to be ready and able servants of God. That's why sandwiched right there in the middle, he says, sanctify, set God apart in your hearts, and be ready to give a reason for an answer for the reason of hope that's in you. And so, finishing up this little series that accidentally took 3 weeks, looking at these good characteristics for all Christians to grow in, we see that it's a constant battle to be prepared for what life throws at us. And yes, while we fully rely on God to do it, we have to continually refresh and renew ourselves through study of His Word, through worship with the saints. And that's one thing we get to do together tonight. I'm so glad to see you all. Let's continue remembering our prayers, those who are having struggles with all these illnesses going around. Like Scott said this morning, we can love each other and wave for the time being if you suspect you might have anything. Wash your hands and things like that. But what are you doing when you're doing that? Actually, aren't you practicing vigilance? Aren't you living with in mind the things that are going on and trying to prevent bad things from happening and help do good things? Well, in a spiritual sense, that's what we're here together to do, to refresh each other and encourage each other to do that. And so, if you're a brother or sister tonight and you recognize that you've been distracted by things in life, they've taken your eyes off the main goal and perhaps made you not as attentive to spiritual things as you should be, we all need refreshed and reminded at times. And we're here today, if you need us to pray for you, to encourage you, at least talk to a brother or sister that you love and trust and get something started with them, an encouragement. If you haven't put on Christ in baptism, we invite you to do that or ask questions and learn what you need about that. But let your need be known by having a seat in one of these front pews as we stand and sing the invitation song.
Would you live for Jesus and be always pure and good? Would you walk with Him within the narrow road? Would you bear your burden, carry all your load? Let Him have His way with can make you what you ought to be. His blood can cleanse your heart and make you free. His love can fill your soul and you will see 'twas best for Him to have His way with thee. Would you have Him make you free and follow at His call? Would you know the peace that comes by giving all? Would you have Him save you so that you need never fall? Let Him have His way with thee. His power can make you what you ought to be. His blood can cleanse your heart and make you free. His love can fill your soul and you will see 'twas best for Him to have His way with thee. his kingdom find a place of constant rest? Would you prove him true each providential test? Would you in his service labor always at your best? Let him